Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Reliably Boombox, kindly brought to you by Sologic Australasia and Reliability Extranet, a group of companies. Today, with my co-host Seven, aka Peter Horsburgh, we also have a lovely colleague, friend, compadre in the reliability world of Jed Andrews. Welcome, Jed Andrews.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Jed's unfortunately in the position where he's not only able to share his lovely face, but that's okay. We'll roll with that.
Maybe next time.
Before we get into a little bit about Jed, just as a little reminder, this is just a general easy go fireside chat. We just shoot the breeze, talk all things reliability, engineering, maintenance, general problem solving, and sustainable asset health. So I might just kickstart, Jed, if you can actually just share a little bit about you, your role, what your kind of experience has been, not necessarily where you're working now, you can sort of keep that hush hush if you like, but yeah, just sort of your experience and what you're into in this world.
So basically experience has been a lot in mobile equipment asset health, mainly in mining industry. And a little bit of heavy earth moving equipment, moving a little bit more into the fixed plant world now as well, and applying what is kind of been considered a bit more normal in the mobile world with the kind of data collection, the use of, live monitoring, and applying that to not only fixed plant, but also industries where it may not be considered as normal to be doing these kind of high level condition monitoring and asset health practices.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So a little bit of a cross section between different fleet types like CAT and Komatsu and ancillary and a little bit of everything.
Yeah, nice. Nice little spread of things there. What I did want to share was one of the things that brought Jed to have conversations more often with Seven and I was his interest in getting, like you just said there, Jed, was getting that information of data collection and analysis to some of the smaller fleets, some of the smaller organizations and companies. And that's one of the things that we're really passionate about here for Seven and I, is to actually, even just through these podcasts, through these conversations, sort of trying to simplify it so that some of these smaller organizations actually could see value in it and have a desire to actually implement it or use it. And what I really love about what you're doing and what we've had other conversations about is that you're actually looking to also deploy that in smaller organizations, make it affordable for them to actually have the smarts that some of these big corporations and organizations have. So thank you for offering to sort of bring that to the world.
And hopefully it's about using those lessons that get learnt on a larger scale and that the smaller businesses may not have had exposure to, the kind of, I suppose, your gold level asset management, the benefits you get from, say, the way a multinational company manages its assets and then applying those same principles, to a smaller business and getting them exposure to those kind of, I suppose, industry best practices, if you will, that they may not have been able to, I suppose, look at with just purely internal resources or being able to justify, having someone on board full time, come in as a specialist and, take those learnings.
Yeah. And Jed, you will get used to Seven scribble notes on the screen. We like them to just appear as they come. But I'm sure you're used to that already. No, I agree. I think that's fantastic. And that's even the reason why I'm so excited about what Seven and I are trying to do and what you're trying to do. Like for Seven and I, we work predominantly with some of the larger organizations. Yet we also see the value for the smaller organizations. And so one of the things I did want to chat to you about today, Jed, was sort of what are some of those big learnings and big lessons that you've had in you know, or you've witnessed just over your time and in your experience that you feel that the smaller players could really benefit from. And Seven, I'll get you to chime in here whenever you you think of something as well. Like, it's sort of a three-way chat. It's not just me questioning Jed. It's like, what sort of examples are, what are some of the things, a couple of key examples that you've had of big problems that small businesses could learn from in the engineering world?
Probably one of the really big focuses that you see in larger companies is there's a big focus on operator training, and you can use the data that you pull off the equipment, whether it's mobile or fixed plant, and you can analyze that and you can compare operators. You can see what they're doing well and use it for education. And I think because the access to that data may not be there in the smaller companies, that isn't available to them. Yeah. So there's a lot more, I suppose, trust put in the operators in the smaller firms.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't have that, you know, data to back them up to be able to provide that education, you know, or the coaching as well.
Yeah, operator training and coaching, I think, are two fantastic things.
In, you know, when you're talking about the equipment they're operating, you know, we're not talking about people driving their cars backwards and forwards. It's, you know, multi-million dollar pieces of equipment that we have our operators operating, and where the difference between good operating practices and bad operating practices can be the difference between, you know, having an early rebuild or that piece of equipment, you know, lasting beyond, you know, what they estimated. And it can be the difference in hundreds of thousands of dollars in rebuild costs and also operating costs.
Yeah.
Getting you know, getting the most out of something costing the least when you've finished with it.
Absolutely. And especially in, you know, earth moving things, one of the largest components of the cost of operating is your fuel usage. So, you know, looking at that, coaching, looking at your good operators, comparing them to, I suppose, the operators that do need help, you can make significant savings.
Yeah. And I think one thing I like to do, and just sort of my input, is humanize it in a sense too. And everything that we talk about, like we often talk about problem solving, RCAs, and then, you know, machine learning. You know, we've talked about in the past, Stefan and I, that doing RCAs on these type of events can be very useful. Like, you could look at fuel consumption. If you give one operator a machine for 6 months, and you give another operator the exact same machine for another 6 months, and that's all they do, after that 6 months, you could potentially go back, do an RCA, solve the problem, and go, okay, where do you, how could you operate it better if they're digging the same hole, so to speak, or doing the same?
It's also very handy for you, as you said there, the RCAs, so you're not making the same mistakes twice.
Yeah.
Like, and that's some things that, you know, some companies do well, especially, you know, the larger ones, is they investigate every instance, so you're not getting bitten by the same thing twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that having the data there helps you get to the bottom of. And you can really narrow it down to a single cause.
Yeah. 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 I agree. And I think when you do have that data and you're able to narrow it down, and whether you're using it for an investigation, for an RCA, like Seven and I even brought up, to me at the moment, the theme's kind of running in, how can small businesses utilize these big business tools, is they can help them to solve these problems in a real simple way. But you might get someone like yourself, Jed, is using all this data to come in and help manage their fleet on an asset level. Then you might get a business coach or a consultant, engineering consultant like Seven, to come in and do an RCA and actually help them identify the cause, help them to pinpoint that cause. But that data collection is a real added benefit to that sort of process.
I think probably if we turn it on its head as well, there's so much data out there that's not being used.
Mm.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier before the machine learning. It's, you know, you may have all the hardware in place to collect data. It's sitting in databases. You know, data storage is so cheap, it costs you nothing to hold on to the data. But what are we actually doing with it? You know, yeah. And it may not be feasible to, you know, have someone there looking at it, setting limits, because there's a lot of front end work that goes into, you know, as that data streams through live as you're collecting it, to set things up that'll add value to that. There's a huge amount of front end work that goes into that. You've got to have, you know, set those limits and, you know, to be able to look at the data even after it's collected live, you know, what actions do you want to take out of it? What do you want to get out of it?
Yeah. 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 I totally agree. And I had this conversation with someone just yesterday when talking about the asset health process. It's like, there's no point in looking for, let's say, excessive fuel consumption if it's not a problem, if it's not something that happens. It's no point in looking at, say, strut pressure if you don't have issues with uneven wear. You know, like, you won't have a good thing that you have a problem with. If you're constantly burning out an engine, or if you're always doing oil changes and like before they need it, sort of thing, like before they're called to be done.
Could I jump in here, Dane? One of the things with big organizations compared to small organizations, so obviously I've worked for some big organizations in my time, and I'm a reliability engineer, right? So I specialize in reliability, which is, you know, one of the tasks or one of the habits you should have as a reliability engineer is constantly identifying where the pain is, okay? Or in if I was to put it into business terms, where you're actually losing value, okay? Or if I want to talk pure profit, you're losing money, right? Where, you know, you're losing money. And I think with the reliability engineer, that's a human, right?
Yeah.
Someone like me, looking at all of this data coming through and saying, geez, that was our biggest problem this week.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do something about that. That's where the problem solving comes in, right? Okay. But I think in the small organization, and correct me if I'm wrong there, Jed, they don't necessarily have reliability engineers like me, because, you know, it's probably not worth the salary, if you want to call it, the money for someone just constantly doing reliability stuff. And I think with all the data that's available, like basically every modern machine now collects data on itself or transmits data on itself in some shape or form. So if we can get that, like I think where you're going there, Jed, is getting that data. So we're getting that data into, and I'm going to use a Microsoft term, actionable information. Or sorry, I got that wrong. Actionable insights. So if we can get,
and I think in those smaller organizations that don't have that reliability engineer, it's kind of like the 80-20 rule. There's, you know, 80% of it is really easy to get. You can, if you just go in there for a small period of time, you can get a lot of easy, quick wins compared to not doing anything. You know, so the value there is just in that first initial look at what data they do have and actioning that straight away. You can kick some massive goals.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, a lot of smaller businesses don't realize, that's, you know, what savings they can make just by, you know, somebody for a couple of hours or, you know, a day a week, just going over their data and actually looking at what's costing them money.
Awesome.
Well, I was thinking there, Jack, I'm getting devil's in the detail. How would you do that would be my next question. And I ask the right question? Did I ask the right question, Dane? How would you do that? I've got some ideas, Jed, but how would you do it?
Depends what kind of industry they're in. What you'd probably have a look at what the makeup of their operating cost per hour is.
Yeah.
And if you start with the biggest slice of that pie, there's probably a lot of easy wins, or a small percentage gain in that area will lead to the largest, overall saving to them. So, if their biggest cost is that machine, paying that off and the repayments they're making on that, well, look at the number of the machines they have. Are they utilizing them for as much time as possible? And, if they've got a fleet of 10 machines on a site, if you can eliminate one of those, that's a 10% cost saving, for that fleet. So start with the biggest slice of the pie and start looking there first.
Yeah. Well, I was actually thinking one of the two approaches I would take is comparison. Because, if you had someone with, five diggers, right? I'll just draw let's call it three diggers. So there's my rough looking diggers, all right? and they could be like the not your 20 tonners and stuff like that. We're not talking the big ones like in the mine sites. And this guy here might be using 12 liters an hour. This guy here might be using 12 liters an hour, but this one here is using like 15 liters an hour. That's an extra 3 liters an hour that I'm consuming over that machine. That's near, let me quickly do the math on that. What, that'd be 15% more for some reason. That's one of the approaches I would take, possibly.
And that's where you get the benefit if you have someone that's across multiple businesses. And if you've got somebody internal that's working on, that one digger that's using 15 litres an hour, that's all they know. They think 15 litres an hour, you beauty. But if you've got somebody that has a comparison to other areas or even different industries, because I think that's something that isn't done very well in general, is applying learnings from one industry and putting it across to another, because everyone's trying to do the same thing. And it may not be exactly, but there's key learnings that you can take across from and may seem completely unrelated, manufacturing and mining. There's some things that manufacturing does extraordinarily well that, mining doesn't do well at all.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Like the analysis of downtimes in a manufacturing plant, they are under the absolute microscope because their output is on, and their profit is on piece rate. So anything that, reduces that, they're onto it straight away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and the reliability engineer at a manufacturing plant will have a lot different focus to, the reliability engineer at a different company,
As
you probably know, Seven.
I know, yes.
So, Seven, what were your little ideas? I think, Seven, you've jotted up a really good example sort of there of what they could be, and I love where you went there with that, Jed, on saying, look, it can even be across businesses, because that I completely agree. I think the world has very much been focused on this win-lose situation. Like, I'm focused on my company, I'm doing what my company has to do and what we have to do, and I'm not telling anyone else any other secrets. However, there are so many other things that we can learn. And you could be in company three, business three, working your two excavators, flat stick, and they're burning 15 litres an hour. And business one is your mate down the road, but you're not talking to him because he does a similar business, but he's only chewing through 12 litres an hour just by changing one little aspect. And you're saving yourself thousands of dollars. Like, quickly do the sums. That's 30 litres extra a day in a 10-hour day.
10-hour shift,
yep. Over 10 days, so over 2 working weeks, that's 300 litres of fuel.
Yep.
At $1.35 a litre. Someone else quickly do the maths.
Yeah, $1.35. So you'd be 30% on top of that. So that'd be $400.
$400 over 2 weeks. Which doesn't seem like much, but if you've all of a sudden got a fleet of 10, you increase your fleet to 10 for some reason, that's $4,000. Mm. In some of these smaller businesses, that $400 even can be the difference between the business making money or losing money on a job.
And that's the difference is there, that's pure profit as well.
Yeah.
That's effectively, if you can just change a small operating practice, it doesn't cost you anything to get that 3 liters an hour back.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's where I think there's an appetite in the smaller businesses for solutions that are low cost to implement and high return.
Yeah.
Whereas in larger businesses, they're happy to spend the capital to have the savings longer term. Mm-hmm. So it's about adjusting your approach to suit the different company.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well, and what their objectives are. And you might have business three there that's happy to use that 15 liters now because they're working that machine harder and they're being more productive with it.
Yes.
Well, true. Absolute true. Yeah. The opposite could be good because these guys are moving more dirt. That's my dirt pocket. Mm-hmm. That looks a little bit sinister. these guys could be moving dirt like this, whereas these guys are only moving dirt like that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, liters per ton of things dirt
To assess and to understand. And you know, one of the key habits in the book is understanding, right?
Mm.
So understanding the whole picture.
Yeah, it's understanding the goals.
Yeah.
And you know what they're trying to achieve, you know.
Yeah.
Is key for approaching each problem, assessing what the goals are and I suppose what the constraints are as well.
Yeah.
You know, you may have very different constraints between each of those businesses, different priorities. As well. So I think yeah, it's important to look at all those factors when you're approaching what may seem like the same problem. You can have three different solutions in three different scenarios.
So we know that you utilize one of the tools that we offer. And that's not the only reason we got you in, but obviously you've played with a bunch of other tools and other things like that out and about. So can you just talk to some of the other tools that you've used in the past or some other things that you found useful in doing this? Because we have our tool, we have our pieces of equipment that we can use, though we also like to share there are other ways to do it. Like, you know, we're not all about just come and talk to us. But what other tools have you seen out there and what other ways have you implemented or what would you say facilitated these sorts of, you know?
It really depends, you know, what budget you're operating in, what you're trying to achieve. Because I suppose if you look at the overall like asset health, there's a few different pieces to it, and there are different solutions do different parts of it very well. Mm-hmm. But what I really struggled to find was a solution that could do, I suppose, tie it all together. There's companies and hardware which is able to be placed on equipment that does a fantastic job of collecting the data and you know, saving it and putting it in a database format. But when it comes to the analysis of it, the user interfaces aren't too friendly or it's slow, you know.
Yeah.
There are solutions which are excellent at database storage, but don't provide a way, I suppose, to put the data in there. So you can have solutions where the user interface is excellent, it's easy to trend, very clear for the person, but to try and get the data actually from the ground, from the equipment, it's so convoluted, or there's mismatches in kind of, I suppose, IT systems, if you will, and limitations in that area, where the process of getting data in is a very manual one, you know, where it comes to exporting it to a spreadsheet and then manually importing it. But once your data's in there, brilliant to use. So the really tough nut to crack is the collection of the data, integration into the database, and then the user interface.
Yeah.
So, and then there's, you know, once you've got the data in there, what are you going to do with it? Mm. And that's, you know, some of the other tools provided by OEMs integrate extraordinarily well on that piece of equipment, collect a fantastic amount of data.
Yeah.
But you can see where the money's being spent, and it's definitely on that hardware side of things, not the user interface.
Yeah.
And then there's some non-OEM solutions which, you know, were probably at the cutting edge for a long time, but you can see that they haven't been able to keep up with some of the newer solutions on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And what were 10 years ago considered, you know, 5 years ago considered the kind of, I suppose, gold standard, they haven't really changed since then. So everything else has caught up and is now starting to overtake those.
Yeah.
So the, I suppose, the scene or the area or the space of this kind of asset health data collection, storage, analysis has changed significantly over the past 5 years, especially.
Yeah, wow.
You know, there's new emerging players coming into the market with, you know, especially from non-OEMs. Previously, it was very limited to, I suppose, larger companies, which this was all they did. So now smaller companies are creating, you know, hardware and software solutions, and very cost-effective ones too. You know, this kind of solution was limited to, you know, high cost, high volume, you know, and now there's smaller solutions that are very affordable for smaller businesses, you know, under $100 a month. You can look at, you know, storing, collecting data, and with no, I suppose, on-site hardware requirements, or cloud-based. Yeah. You know, one great example is there's a little thing called an AutoPi, which is based on a Raspberry Pi, and it plugs into your car's OBD2 connector and has all online cloud-based, a little 4G SIM card in it, and you can look at all your car's data just through a web interface, and that's, I think, about $340 or something like that.
I need one of them for the bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Okay.
Actually, I'm talking about that hardware. I actually just bought two OBD2 Bluetooth OBD2 connectors.
Ooh.
For less than $20.
Oh.
off Kogan, which is an Australian, just for our international customers. Kogan is on it's not an eBay, but it's like an Amazon, Australian version of Amazon, if you call it that.
So you look at that data collection part of the little flow chart there, that extraordinarily cheap, $20, and you're in there.
Yeah.
And then, but then you look at what you're going to do with that data. You've then got to export that and then put it in Excel and do some analysis yourself, which is very, I suppose, resource hungry to do that if you're doing it on a large scale. So that's where you look at, there's a lot of solutions out there that do one of those parts cheaply or very well, but it's very hard to find something that does all four of those.
Mm. Yeah, right.
So as that was probably my biggest challenge when I was, you know, looking around for a software, hardware provider so that I could offer my service in the kind of the monitoring and being a specialist monitoring service, is just trying to piece those four together was a very difficult task. And you're kind of, there was always a compromise. So, but kind of now having found the Sorba platform to take care of the store, analyze, and alert part of that, the collection, and as Seven found, the collection part of it, there's a lot of different hardware providers that you know, integrate in there. So now suddenly you're only trying to solve one of those four problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as we've, as you found, you found Sorber, and you know, you sort of found it yourself. We didn't come hunting at you and go, Jed, check this out. Although we get excited when we talk to other engineers about it. Especially when Seven talks about it, but admittedly I do too. What excited you most about it? And I don't, I want you to be raw and real about it. I don't want you to just think of trying to plug us and sell us on. I want you to really just be honest about how this worked for you and what you like about it.
Probably the biggest thing was everything was possible. And I suppose that was the biggest thing, was it wasn't, there was never the word can't. Like, can I integrate with this? Yep, that'll be possible. We'll just have to check it. Yep, we can do that. And so it wasn't limited on you, kind of, I suppose, if you went with a particular hardware collector, you know, there were so many ways, you know, was it going, sending it to a database? Was it, you know, sending it to the cloud? Was it sending it to a, you know, a server at your house?
Yeah.
You know, I suppose the system can pull and is compatible with so many of the different, I suppose, protocols, if you will, that there's a lot of, it gives people a lot of flexibility to utilize some stuff they have existing, you know, where they can, or tailor a hardware solution from any vendor they want, you know, for different, you know, there's an outdoor application and an indoor application, or on a piece of mobile equipment, and it all just feeds in.
Yeah.
You know, even up to other databases as well. So if you've already got an existing data collection, I suppose SQL server or something, wherever you are, it's just a case of querying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also the user interface was good, and the handling of the large amounts of data, that's a challenge you see in this area. Is it's all well and good to kind of handle 20 bits of information flowing in at 1 second intervals, but once you're trying to handle 1,000, you know, kind of a lot of solutions drop out when you start to get to that kind of a level.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it was one of the few, you know, solutions that I'd found which offered all four of those. And to a level that was usable.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Sorry, Seven, if you had something to say. Oh,
well, I was just going to say, I'm in the same camp. Like when I first met the Sorber guys, right, which was we're talking time frame, December 2018 in Florida. At the International Maintenance Conference, and I concur with what Jed's saying, is that when I met Aldo and AJ, you know, and they showed me, or they demonstrated, there was more on the show, they demonstrated, right, they had a little piece of kit there that they had this whole, it was all hooked up to, an end-to-end system. And when I saw this, I said, holy geez, you guys you guys have just blown a whole heap of big brands right out of the water with what you've shown me. And then, you know, and you know, I concur with what Jed just said. It when I first saw it, it blew me out of the water.
Yeah.
You've had, you know, a more exposure in different industries, and I suppose it blew me away too, that the whole solution, that was the kind of big thing, is that end to end, as you said there, it was the kind of first one that I'd seen that did all parts.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And, you know, and I agree with what Jed was saying. Like my experience is we built an IoT system from scratch, right? We were a project manager and like we built hardware, we built servers, you know, we built interfaces into the thing from scratch because we had some of the bigger players in the world actually simply let us down in this particular area. And you know, so what Sorba has done, like, and the way that they've pieced it together to make it, you know, easy to use, and get it to happen. And, you know, we're not talking about like, what is it? When, you know, somebody asked me a question last night about a problem, and literally on the phone, I am building up a dashboard to help monitor this problem. So we're talking minutes to implement stuff.
Yeah. I suppose from my perspective as well, when as a service provider and using this from kind of my internally, the other big thing was the cost of entry. So if you look at the bigger players in the market, you know, they require a lot of, you know, on-site stuff. Like, you know, there's a lot of hardware to support getting the data off the equipment, or, you know, you're actually on site. Whereas it's feasible with this to monitor, you know, one thing for a very affordable, you know, price. For example, if you've got a pump or a generator operating in a remote environment, it's not cost prohibitive to entry to say, hey, I'd like to monitor this pump, just one. Yep, cool, I'd like to see all these things. And then you find the right hardware solution and the ongoing costs are quite low. Whereas some of the other solutions out there require a lot of actually physically hardware installed at a site level, databases set up and everything like that.
I one of the sites I was working at for a while, I was looking at exactly that. And it was right at the time when Seven came and talked to me about Sorba as a product, and I was just like, and we were talking about pumps, so we're talking about remote pumps and generators and things, and it was one of the biggest issues that these pumps would always get either over-serviced, under-serviced, missed the service, because they just had no idea. They could never tell when they were running. It was up to someone physically going around and checking an hour meter that had been ticking over on it, and they kept missing it, and I could imagine the amount of hours that this particular site had spent trying to nut through the best possible way to manage these so they don't miss a service. Because they had a pump on there they called the $1 million pump, because it's just a pump, no big deal, but it blew up, but it flooded another part of the pit, which meant they had to move something else, and it totally ruined the pump, which they had to pull out. They had to get a higher one back in for the 12 months it took to replace it, and then they had to rebuild it or repair it. And so it's those additional costs that we don't necessarily look at. But what I've seen, and like you said there, Jed, was the low entry level made it viable to actually apply this machine learning sort of process to the pumping system, and then you've just got to find the right piece of hardware. So having something like Sorba that allows you to collect data from anything and everything, like, whereas if you're talking, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jed, but you're talking about some of the other bigger players in this machine learning world, you have to use their hardware or you have to use their data collection method. You know, like, they might pull it from any sensor or any other hardware, but then you've got to take it through its own servers and its own piece of information
that's correct. They kind of lock it all away in a pipeline, if you will, directly from the asset all the way into their software. So and that's sometimes the frustrating thing when you come in. You're locked into that solution, and you know, you can't look at getting hardware that may be more fit for purpose for a particular application.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, not to keep plugging Sorber, but, you know, with the same, you know, back-end system and machine learning system, you can have a particular piece of hardware attached to your pump that's fully IP rated and can withstand the weather. You can pull that data in, but you can also have a highly sophisticated, you know, basically computer sitting on a piece of mobile equipment, sending data to the same platform, doing some of the computing on the truck or whatever you've got running around that, and coming into the same system. So you've got basically a one-stop shop to look at your pumps, mobile equipment, but they're being monitored by two very different bits of hardware that would definitely not work in each application. You know, for example, the pump, the piece of hardware monitoring the pump wouldn't be able to handle the vast amounts of data coming in from your truck.
Yeah. 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 Awesome. So kind of circling back a little bit there, Jed, on the conversation that, and I guess I want to give you an opportunity to talk about how you see this working for some of the smaller businesses. And you talked about before sort of being able to identify, having someone, we talked about some of the big problems that you've seen and mainly around operator and training behaviors and things like that. But what, I guess, give us a bit of a scenario. Say you came into, say it was something different. Say it was an area that you hadn't necessarily worked in. I'm going to throw one at you. Is say a busing company. Say you had a large, relatively large busing company in a sub town here somewhere in Australia that was interested in your services. What sort of things would you look for or talk to them about and try and identify within their bus fleet, so to speak, at the get-go as a first sort of instance and something to keep it sort of low entry cost, something as a minimal pain point?
So you probably, your first easy win is talking to the people that service the buses, because they've probably been dealing with issues for years that, you know, are either recurring. So when, as we spoke about before, looking at doing your Pareto, you look at what keeps biting us, and they might come and say, we, you know, the biggest expense we have is buses overheating. And then you start going, right, that's, you know, high cost for the company and also the downtime as well. Yeah. So you could put in place something relatively cheap with a small piece of hardware and you may only want to look at that parameter to begin with, you know, and some other key bits of parameters, install the kind of the hardware on the on one, say, as a trial, and then see what data, see what value you're getting off it to say, can we identify, I suppose, can we prevent it from happening? You know, so if you look at, you may set your custom limits down a little bit lower, and then as they start to get breached, it gives either, you know, depending on how you set it up, you know, either someone like myself a chance to intercept it and give them a call and say, hey, this particular bus is, you know, overheating. You may want to talk to the operator and, you know, ask them to pull up or see, you know, speak to them. Is there something, are they going up a steep hill, you know, something like that. And if it's not super urgent, you may not even have to interrupt that bus. You say, oh no, it's dropping down again. May want to check the radiator at the next service, clean it out. And it might come in, it might be full of leaves or dust or something like that, and that solves the problem.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's looking for those easy wins. And then if it's something that adds value, then you start to deploy it across the fleet.
Mm. Yeah.
I suppose the big win and the area where you try and get the wins with the data is to avoid stoppages, to avoid those unplanned maintenance, you know?
Yeah.
A bus that breaks down on the side of the road, is going to cost a lot more to fix a leaking radiator. It's there, you've got to tow it, you've got to take another bus out, transfer all the people. You know, it's not just the maintenance cost, there's a reputational damage as well. Nobody likes being stuck beside the road. Whereas if you can say, hold on, we're starting to see the trend of temperatures increasing on this bus, you need to check this on your service.
Yeah.
They've got a targeted area to check.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things to do, but yeah, first is talk to the people. They're the ones that are dealing with every day. And it also gives you a little bit more credibility as well. If you can solve their pet peeves, they'll be a lot more on board and a lot more willing to work with you. And it gets them on side really quickly to solve the pet peeves that they've been dealing with for sometimes years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's one thing I'm very much an advocate of, is that I'm not a fan of, truckie drives past. I'm not a fan of the, you know, one shoe fits all sort of scenario. Like, there's no point in, you know, you going in and saying, oh yeah, we'll put this on and we'll monitor your fuel and we'll make sure that you get all your drivers, you know, consuming the right volume of fuel, and you won't blow an engine again because we'll do this, 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 and this, and this. If you're not listening to them and you're just telling them what they need to do, their buy-in and acceptance is often less eager. It's more so.
It's like we go back to the digger, you know, those three digger companies there. What do you want to achieve out of it?
Yes.
Do you want to get the job done as quickly as you can?
Yeah.
Then we can do that. Or do you want to get the job done efficiently as you can? You know, so understanding what they want out of it. And, you know, and some customers don't know what they want out of it. They just want to, they will come to you and say, what can you do for me? Yeah. And often, you know, you say, well, let's see, let's do a trial. Let's see what value I can add. And in some cases, you know, you go, well, this is what I can do. And I say, oh, look, it's not really for me, you know, at the moment, worth the cost. And you say, no worries.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's about the demonstrating what you can do and addressing their concerns first. Then you can come with your own ideas and say, hey, I've seen this work well at other places. We've got a lot of benefit out of it. Is that something you want to look at? You know, so they might just want to stop mechanical things, and then you can slowly move into, hey, do you want to look at operator training? And they say, oh, what can you show me? And then you start to present them with things, you know, XYZ is, you know, using more fuel, or even to a point where it's a safety issue. You say, hey, this bus is doing 120 kilometers an hour, and they, you know, don't know.
That's one of the things that I've been really blown away with the whole platform, is I at first believed it was all about maintenance and preventing failures and so forth. The more I dive into it, the more I see how I can just benefit general operations and businesses, you know, in better fuel consumption, less wear and tear on tires, less damage to buses, even to safety. For example, they use a silver platform in a transporting company in the United States, and they have a safety alert where they have microphone inputs from it, and it's not to record all the conversations that go on and hear people's private lives. It just has a signal, look for the word help, or listen for, not look for, listen for the word help, and when help is said three times in a row, send an alarm. And it's quite simple that when, you know, you hear help, 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 they send an alarm, the bus driver's alerted, or however they solve it. But like you said, it's a safety sort of feature to add an element there for them. So there are a lot of other potentials, which I think is really great. And that's,
I think one of the keys is, although there's a lot of data and there's a lot of emphasis on data analysis, you also very much need the human element too.
Yes.
Is to, you know, be able to take the feedback on what the customer thinks their issues are.
Yeah.
And to be able to, you know, sit there and coach the drivers as well, because sometimes it may be difficult for the customer to sit down with one of their operators and say, you know, their boss, trying to tell them, you know, how to do things. But if you have a conversation with someone with data sitting there, it's a lot easier conversation to have than say, you're doing a bad job driving your bus. And, you know, that person might have been operating that bus for 40 years and they instantly get on the back foot. But if you sit down with them and say, hey, going up, you know, this part of the road, you can see Jimmy over here is using half as much fuel as you, you know, because you're sitting in fifth gear, he's sitting in fourth gear, you know.
Yeah.
Is that something that, you know, maybe give that a try, changing down to fourth gear and see how it goes.
Yeah.
But you've got the data there. You're not just criticizing them for nothing. It's to say, hey, your practices are different and this is what it's leading to.
Yeah.
A data-driven debate was one of my bosses used to say. A data-limited discussion. There was data-driven discussions, data-limited discussions, and data-free discussions.
Yeah, right.
So, and he used to have a sign on his board, and he's... I bet he's going to listen to this and he's going to chuckle at me, because I've been known to walk into this and have a data-free debate. and he says, Simon, look at the sign on the front of the door. So he forced me to go and get data. And really, that's, I take that, like, from my experience, what Jed just saying is absolute gold. You know, if you bring some data, you know, high quality data, this is what's happening in scenario A, this is what's happening in scenario B, you're in control of scenario B, you could get a scenario A if you do this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and bring people along on the journey. And, you know, it's habit 5 of the book, facilitate to implement.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's terrible, isn't it?
So awesome. Well, look, I think we've covered a lot of ground. There on that, we've got a lot of little scribbly notes there to decipher, which we'll share with you all. But look, Jed, is there anything else that you want to share about sort of where you're sort of going with this business, or what you're hoping to, you know, assist people with?
It's mainly about offering, I suppose, smaller to medium sized businesses that may not have the facilities to, you know, all the resources, and may not require somebody in their business full time, but would like to have someone like that on call, who's, you know, looking at the data. Their core role is not to do with the operations of the business, because, you know, a lot of times you see reliability engineers' roles becoming diluted because, you know, they, you know, loaded up with other things and they're taken away from just this kind of data analysis. So I suppose, it's real offering those reliability services and doing the data collection piece and data analysis to people that may not have the resources to require someone there 5 days a week. So just one reliability engineer that goes around and looks after, you know, a few different clients at each for a little bit of time.
Yeah, awesome. You get sort of that objective view of it too, without being in it. And I used this analogy with Seven the other week. I once heard of analogies like, sometimes when your clothes are dirty, you got to wash them, and you throw them in the washing machine. But if you're in there in the washing machine going through, getting all the shit taken off you, you can't necessarily see how good a job the washing machine's doing. Whereas if you have someone like yourself, so if you take that as the bus company, as the washing machine, it's in there, it's going round and round and round. And the operations manager, who is also the head of the workshop, who is also the, you know, lead mechanic, is in that washing tub. He's doing all the work, he's getting dirty and he's getting cleaned and he's trying to sort it all out. And you've got a Jed kindly popping over the top and having a look and going, well, no wonder you're not quite getting everything cleaned up, because you've got a ball of grease sitting in the back corner there that you need to pull out. or your whole washing machine's on an angle and it's leaking out the side.
And it's that subjective view as well, looking in and you know, looking and having an overarching look at the business or the operation as a whole and saying, look, you may be better off to do it this way, or have you thought about doing it this way? You know, because the solution might be sitting there right in front of their face, but they're, you know, so preoccupied looking after, you know. And that's what you often find in these, you know, small to medium businesses is there's one person responsible for, you know, let's take, you know, the bus company, for the, as you said, workshop manager, servicing manager. They're not going to have the time or the focus to start like thinking about, you know, Ford, or, you know, what am I going to look at on this bus's next service or something. They're worried about getting that bus out on time, what's sitting out in the yard. Like, they're more focused on the immediate. And that's the area where the, you know, the majority of these small to medium businesses operate, is they're in the now, they're in the execution, they're in, you know, executing the plan. And that plan may run out a week in advance, but it's kind of to have somebody look, all right, when this bus comes in for a next service, what are we looking at? You know, is there things we need to be paying particular attention to? And you become that forward look. You know, we're not just, it's not reactive maintenance, it's proactive maintenance. And taking that step is huge. And it's, you know, it's something you have to have the tools and the data to be able to do, and the mindset as well.
And the time. And the time to do
exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the beautiful things that you sort of put together there, and I do really like it. And look, I think you've got a great future ahead of you in that space. I certainly, from working alongside you for a short period that we've known each other so far, I think you're very intelligent, you understand equipment, and you've also got that objective view in general, whether it be just about where you're working itself or about someone else's sort of company, and you're good at thinking outside of the box. So I think that's fantastic. I certainly do wish you all the best on this journey, and I think it's a great business model that you have. I think thank you for sharing your views and opinions on Sorbra, and also for just sharing some of the big sort of problems that some of the smaller businesses can potentially look at.
Thank you very much for having me, and look forward to working together going forward.
Yeah, no worries. And look, if anyone does want to consider Jed's services, Jed, is there anywhere they can find you? It's the easiest way, or do you want us to just direct them to you? They can reach out to us. What's?
Yeah, probably through you guys. It's gonna be best.
Yep, cool. Well, just reach out to us at reliabilityextranet.com or on LinkedIn. If you just comment, even on the web, on our YouTube podcast, whatever you want, and add notes. Sorry, Seven.
I was just going to say same thing. Sorry.
Yep. Comment. Like, subscribe. Do your usual thing. And just so you all know, we get no kickbacks from Jed. It's not a case of, you know, the more customers we point his way, he gives us something in the back pocket at all. It's not that way at all. That's not what we're about. We really just wanted Jed on because we like the way he thinks about things. Look, we hope you've enjoyed the show today. If you have any questions, queries, as always, comment, follow us, check us out, and catch up, reach out. And if you'd like to hear more from Jed or about what Jed can help you with, then certainly reach out to us and we'll kindly point you in his direction and help him along his journey to helping you as best he can. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Seven. Thanks, Jed. And we look forward to catching up again soon.